People who make you think. Further to the idea that you need people you can connect to and be yourself with, you'll need people who consistently make you think. Church people, other people, whoever. People who make you think things you haven't heard 6,000 times already. People who say things you haven't heard 7,000 times already. I found some. They were weird. They weren't popular. They didn't have it all figured out, and they didn't know how to behave or treat other people sometimes. But over time, networks sprang up. You'd meet one guy or girl who had an interesting take on some of the same stuff you yourself were working through, and you'd meet that person's friends and family, and maybe connect to some of them too. And they'd have friends, and some of them might connect to you. Back in the day, at first my mental database contained only that very in-depth indoctrination in the kinds of thoughts that were propagated in my church culture. So my 20s were about populating that database with all the other ideas I could hear from all manner of other people too, not necessarily to believe them so much as simply to know them, like having screwdrivers and wrenches to go with the hammer I was given by my birth culture. And for that, I needed to find people who'd be themselves around me and share stuff. I definitely needed people who weren't just parroting things they'd heard. Yes, of course, some people are superhumanly persuasive and tricky. And you could, in theory, get caught up in Scientology or Jehovah's Witnessness or whatever. But the thing is, if you are genuinely seeking God, that urge to seek Him was almost certainly put into you because He is seeking you first, and you'll find each other. So wade in. My disgruntled brethren associates and I had originally been used to relying 100% on our church system to do our social networking for us. And now that same system was trying to keep us from connecting to anyone at all, within or without. No help from them. So it was very new to have to do it all ourselves. And we had no internet. We weren't used to it at all. We were used to contenting ourselves with talking to whoever else showed up at church stuff. I cannot tally up the miles driven, the tanks of gas, the truly terrifying phone bills, the broken down cars, the odd, tedious little towns I spent time in just to try to have conversations that got me somewhere further down the road I was taking, spiritually speaking. I am an individualist and tend to believe that heavily organized group events are almost always entirely blottity blah blah blah, to use the technical term. I believe they are mostly workable, only in theory, and that they're not designed to meet the needs of thinkers or individualists. They're mostly just self-congratulatory enthusiasm building. I think they mainly spend time in patting themselves on the back for anything that isn't broken or which can be made to look worthwhile. Often, they're congratulating themselves on things that are almost entirely imaginary. But then, I am a cynical bastard. I can't think of a group that ever did much of anything in my formative years but stabbed me in the back for being myself. So I try to avoid wasting time with groups of any kind, because I don't believe in them, ultimately. I think they inspire people to serve the status quo, mostly. I don't really trust them a bit, particularly to be challenging, to call me to task for the right stuff, and also support the stuff that ought to be supported. I don't see what they have to do with me connecting with God and His children. Most of His children, who ever made me think a thing, were people the system warned me to avoid. In fact, many Christians from a legalistic background, burned by a church, don't really feel safe going to yet another church. Sometimes the antidote to too much church, all up in your business all the time, simply isn't more church, not even a good one. Even when we recovering legalists deal with clumps of Christians who are in a different group than our own, we find that we were raised to view other groups with suspicion, and many of us have to overcome that. And we have to give serious thought to how worth it that endeavor might be. Mickey says,
I grew up in the exclusives and left when I was 18. For the next 30 years, yes, 30 years, I didn't go anywhere else because I had been brainwashed into thinking that nowhere else was good enough. Thankfully, God gave me the courage last year to attend a local evangelical church where I've rediscovered the wonderful blessing of a real non-judgmental Christian fellowship.
Sometimes trying to connect to other Christians outside the meeting can have a bumpy start. Luann was simply looking to connect with other Christians on Facebook and reports in confusion,
I just got called a fag enabler by some guy from the Westboro Baptist Church. I don't even know what that means. He said that most Christians, especially Plymouth Brethren, don't go far enough in condemning homosexuality. He said just about the entire church, except for the Westboro Baptist Church, of course, not only accepts faggotry, but also condones it. He then said I was probably a low-life scum lesbian skank. He said that I deserve to be called that because I do not go far enough in condemning homosexuality. This guy seemed to be fixated on hating gays. Who are these people? I have never heard of them, and they sure don't sound like any Baptist I know.
Luann is unlikely to learn about Christians outside her meeting being loving toward people from that particular church group. Anne writes,
at first, I was uncomfortable with everyone from outside the meeting. Then I started to connect with people one at a time, and I was fine with that. I found that I could connect with anyone, one-on-one. Now I just have a lot of anxiety in groups like parties. I do okay, but I'm stressed inside that I'll look dumb or reveal how clueless I am. For a while, I'd reveal that I was raised fundamentalist, perhaps as a defense. I'd like to not need to do that. I think that is less in my head as part of my identity. I still feel weird, like a weird outsider, though. Romantic relationships? Well, it's hard to put a religious status on an online dating profile. I can't stand most Christians, so putting Christian is a terrible idea. At the same time, I can't relate to people who have no religious background. I ended up marrying a lapsed Catholic, which has worked pretty well. He's conservative, lifestyle-wise, in the ways that I am. He thinks about spirituality and hates religion as much as I do.
Ruth was luckier, or more blessed, as Brethren people would put it. She had a grandmother who took her around to various churches even while Ruth was still committed to her Brethren group and still being taught all the time that there was one right place and that we were that spiritual place. She says,
I first attended church services that were not assembly meetings with my grandmother, who was a powerful non-Brethren spiritual influence in my life. From her, I learned how paltry the differences between the denominations really are. She was a lifelong Methodist, but happily attended Universalist, Nazarene, and Baptist services. She was a real swinger, and I get that tendency to visit many flavors of church, without discrimination and with open mind and heart, from her. I inherited my skepticism regarding all that is hypocritical and insincere in Christianity from her, as well as her earnest enjoyment of morsels spoken from the pulpit that resonated deeply and helped strengthen and clarify daily walking with God. From her, I learned that all that really matters is our shared love for and faith in Jesus Christ. It was her level-headed point of view that in many ways let me see the meeting as it appeared to an outsider rather than an indoctrinated insider. All this to say that attending a church service with her was kind of a big deal. The first service I ever attended was an Easter service. What struck me the most was how wrong what I had always been taught about other Christian churches was. The folks really knew about Jesus, knew what their Bible said about what he taught and how he lived, died, and rose again. I was terrified and threatened by how much I loved attending non-meeting church services with my Grammy, by how at home and at ease I felt in those services, and by how much I got out of them, how the beauty of the sanctuaries, the music, and the liturgy fed my beauty-hungry soul. Flash forward a few years and I am stealing away, more out of curiosity and a willingness to enter his world, as he has been willing to enter mine, to attend church services with the man who would become my husband. I was even more terrified and threatened by how much I enjoyed these Methodist services. The simple messages, the fervent singing, the warmth and friendliness, the readings of a tremendous variety of scripture instead of the same passages every week. Each passage prefaced not by endless types and shadows and interpretations, but instead a quick historical overview and a brief commentary, the freedom to laugh, relax, sing lustily, and generally enjoy being in church all did me good. I knew I wasn't supposed to love church, and that the Lord, I had been taught, wasn't in the midst, and that they were on the wrong ground. But church became my guilty pleasure the way movies and concerts became others. I invented elaborate and watertight reasons Sunday mornings why I could not go to meeting so I could attend church services. I suffered agonies of guilt when I went back to the breaking of bread after partaking of communion with the Methodists. I knew that was against the rules big time, but I couldn't not break bread with the Methodists, later also the Catholics and Anglicans, my brothers and sisters. This was the beginning of the years-long struggle. How could I go on in a group of Christians, no matter how well-meaning, who refused the Lord's table to any true believer who chose not to affiliate exclusively with them? The other side of the question, yes, much as I love and enjoy, and I'm nourished, cleansed, and warmed by the church experiences I have described, I believe there are many forms of Christian worship that, because of my background, I will never be able to appreciate or feel comfortable enough to participate in. I have attended many services that gave me the willies, sat through a variety of contemporary or charismatic or Pentecostal services with my skin crawling.
Many with my background simply switched only right groups and never really questioned the idea itself, simply what church it was that they believed to be the right one. Others lost their faith in God entirely. I lost my faith in Christians operating in groups. Well, people operating in groups, to be more accurate. Put more than two or three people in a room, I feel, and human nature will out eventually. So I went around having aggressively theological, who is God, existential, why am I, and psychological, is the inside of my head supposed to be like this, discussions, with anyone who would have them anywhere I could get to. This seems, in retrospect, to have been a very good move. Sure, compared to most folks, I know more Christian and ex-Christian people who have substance abuse problems or who are now dead, but it seems to have been the thing to do anyway. Ruth says,
one of the things that surprised me most about people outside my birth culture, at least the people I am close to, is how utterly comfortable in their own skin they are, how they are not living in constant awareness of every word they speak or every move they make, how they are not in a straitjacket of constant fear and terror. Brethren will deny to the death that they are afraid, but afraid they are, enmeshed in a spiderweb of fear. People outside my birth culture are able to relax and let their hair down, have a couple beers, and say what's on their mind without being in a constant state of hypervigilance. You can differ with them, even violently disagree on topics, and still be friends and still hang out and even find stimulation and enjoyment in those disagreements. Finally, people outside our birth culture tend to be so much more compassionate and to have a better grasp on the concept, weep with them that weep. They don't feel the need to point out that the Lord is speaking in every adverse circumstance in life. They can commiserate and say, yeah, man, that sucks. I feel ya. Instead of being Job's comforters.
I couldn't agree more. And now there are computers. So meeting up with people you can relate to should be all easy and stuff, right? Even chatting online? Or maybe there was something to be said for eating with all kinds of different people and being in the same room as them. Computers aren't the same, but trying to stay connected with all of your peeps after you leave or get kicked out, and also connect to new Christians? The research of ex-brethren, psychologist Jill Mitten, says that along with memory problems, an inability to connect with other human beings is an all-too-common complaint of people raised in what she refers to as high-demand religious groups. That's a very polite way of saying cult, and her Taylor Hales experience definitely qualifies. Ruth writes,
I recall having a gathering of meeting friends at my wedding, and how the ones who actually showed up and did not boycott the event, grouped together by themselves, did not mingle much with the other non-brethren guests, and were very stiff and standoffish in their body language. That was hard for me, as I wanted people to mingle and meet one another and have a good time. A number of meeting friends unfriended me on Facebook after I began to write posts about attending a Methodist church and celebrating Christmas.
It's almost like, for many, Christianity is about choosing a side and fighting for it against the rest of the church. Like Christianity is supposed to be a 2,000-year-old civil war, us against us. Outside perspective. This is important too, I believe. You need people who can give you an outside perspective on yourself and your world. People coming from somewhere utterly different than you are, but who you can, somehow, connect to. Also, books and movies that depict cultures like your own and people like you can be very helpful as well. Ones with an outside, objective, or even negative perspective, rather than just more of your culture selling itself to you who were raised in it. You're going to need to learn how to accept, care about, walk with, and love people who don't even agree with you about various things. Important things, even. You need to learn to agree to disagree and then keep right on hanging out. There was a guy named Curry who forgave me for not drinking with him, for not going and backing him up when he was getting into fights, for not being able or willing to go to concerts, hockey games, movies, high school dances, pubs, dance clubs, pool halls, strip clubs, or whatever with him. He was always trying to get me to go with him to stuff like that, and I always refused. But he always kept trying. He didn't stop being my friend. That made him unique. Why was he valuable? He gave me another perspective, a second point of view to ponder on everything. It wasn't like I was trading in my own views in favor of his. It was more like I was learning that my views weren't actually, in many cases, my own views at all, but had been handed to me in a kind of colorful church Happy Meal bag. Now, there's nothing wrong with Happy Meals. But if you're trying to learn to cook and budget your money and you've never made yourself anything but have been living only on Happy Meals, that's too much of a good thing, no matter how many plastic toys of recent Hollywood blockbuster movies you now own, helping remind you that there ever were such films even 2 months later. In my natural habitat, just like with all kids, be they Pennsylvania Amish, or kids growing up in a hovel in Baghdad, or in Chicago with a mother with mental illness, everything was normal. Because it always just is. Whatever your surroundings are, to you, they are normal. For me, Curry was a normality check, because he had very strong feelings of his own about what was and was not normal from a vantage point all the way across the road from our house. Sure, he had stuff in his home life, but he saw his home life as very, very normal, and so when we hung out, he was kind of like an odd version of Jiminy Cricket, letting me know what seemed weird to him, reminding me that there were other ways to react and think, feel, and live besides the only way I'd ever seen. He also pointed out when I was being a Pharisee prick, which was often. All of this challenged me as to what I was able to view as normal. It made me have to grow up and learn to accept and identify with a slightly broader range of humanity, and one with much higher standards for courage, honesty, integrity, openness, faithfulness, honor, frankness, and decency. I didn't know then how much I needed a non-brethren friend. If I had grown up Amish, there would no doubt have simply been a real lack of people in my life who weren't Amish. If I had been growing up in Baghdad, I might never have met and connected with somebody who wasn't Iraqi and wasn't dealing with the same heaps of rubble as I dealt with daily in my perfectly normal, crumbling, bombed-out neighborhood. But I had Curry. He saw how all brethren men had short hair, and most brethren women had very long hair. He saw how at church events the men all had trousers and the women all had dresses or skirts instead. He saw all the preppy clothes and no other styles. He saw a room full of people all carefully rocking the same basic business casual style. Curry felt the conservative uniformity in style was odd. It wasn't like that at school. At school there was diversity. He saw how that not some, but all brethren women put on head coverings, including what looked like lace doilies, Spanish head coverings easily carried in one's purse called mantillas, wholly inedible, it turns out, even with salsa, when they did anything religious, including singing hymns or listening to Bible lectures. He told me that most churches did not do this. How unscriptural, I thought. Don't they read their Bibles, I wondered. Curry watched Star Trek, Airwolf, Mad Max, Rocky, The A-Team, and a myriad Chuck Norris and Steven Seagal movies, and felt that they were very, very good, and that everyone should watch them. This was a nice counterpoint to what was gospel in my surroundings, that these things were very, very dangerous, corrupting temptations which taught dark lessons to unsuspecting youth. There certainly was no shortage of church people thinking I was weird if I differed in any way from what was usual for people my age there. This meant there was a well-intentioned, genuinely worried pressure that never let up, pushing me to conform to the norm. But with Curry around, suddenly there was pressure pushing me in the opposite direction, too, quite often. This kind of thing often has the effect of allowing you to balance. pressure from one direction is something you can get used to and not even notice in terms of how it's making you walk around. Add pressure from another direction, which pressure hasn't been negated by your being overly homeschooled and or forbidden outright to play with non-church kids, and suddenly you have more to think about, and there's more than one opinion on what's normal. If there's only ever one opinion, it's hard to understand the possibility of a second one. If there are two, though, adding a third is much, much easier. Having Curry at church youth group functions was especially valuable in terms of getting a second opinion on what and who was what. Suddenly it was easier to see something or someone from two sides instead of just the one, black and white. The fact that Curry lived right across the road, that Mom had babysat him and his little brother Doug, and that he'd come out to Brethren Youth stuff from time to time, meant that though my school acquaintances were largely completely lost to me once they started going to parties and dances, Curry, at least, was always over there, just across the way. He wasn't a meeting kid, so my dad didn't want me hanging out with him. But it happened anyway. My dad didn't want me hanging out with the meeting kids either. He wanted me piling wood, picking rocks out of fields, going to meeting and reading my Bible. And nothing much else. The fact that Curry now lives across North America rather than across the road, and that we've never been very similar and have grown out of who we were when we were able to connect, means we don't really play much of a role in each other's lives anymore. I miss him, though. But I thank God for making sure there was Curry in my life, helping me to see me, helping me to see our meeting culture, helping me to see options.